and I wanted to cut to First Voice and give you a little video presentation of what First Voice is about. I know there's been a little bit of discussion about it in different venues and different committees, and wanted to give you a sense of the program and to introduce Norman to talk about it a little bit in the context of these audience figures that we're dealing with now. So let me put this, run this.
Is this the same presentation we saw in Berkeley?
No, this is, I think you saw this. The old board may have seen this. The old board may have seen this, but...
I think we saw it in L.A., perhaps?
Yeah, maybe in L.A.
Once upon a time...
Mukashi aru tokoro ni...
A long time ago...
Noon unan pana...
APFA, apprenticeship.
You know, this issue is so important because, one, we're talking about just a handful now of corporations that could control the media, could control information, could control access to information. We're talking about, I think, a fundamental infringement upon our democracy.
The apprenticeship program politicized me in a way that may have happened, but it wouldn't have happened that quickly and at that time. And so my interest quickly changed from just wanting to be a music DJ to wanting to give voice to my community.
I learned everything about radio production through that program, from interviewing techniques, the skills you learn about collaboration.
One thing, you know, that really struck me really immediately, and I don't think I was expecting it, was the artistic nature of radio and just the relationship to sound and to storytelling.
It broadened my worldview, and it grounded me in my ability to be with people very different than myself.
I think that is the beauty of this particular program, that you've got diverse voices, you've got diverse perspectives, and yet you've got the high quality and the high training that's required so people can communicate the truth effectively.
The First Voice Apprenticeship Program is a community-driven radio training model that was started at Pacifica flagship station KPFA in Berkeley in 1984. For over two decades, First Voice has maintained a legacy as one of the most significant programs for media diversity in the country. The program was established to provide a bridge for women and people of color of all ages to gain access to media skills and literacy. Since its inception, First Voice has built an outstanding reputation of service by creating a ramp for over 250 community participants to engage in a skills-based program that supports the telling and generation of their own stories.
First Voice is the expression within each individual that's connected to their own spirituality, their own sense of consciousness, their own being, their own community. That when that voice resonates, it's not somebody else's voice, it's theirs, and they claim it, and they have authority with it.
I don't have to wait for somebody to tell my story. I could tell it myself. And I think that's a tremendous gift that we offer the community at large.
I'm HIV positive, I'm gay, I'm African American, and being part of those three groups, my perspective of the world is very different than the mainstream. And I want to get my point of view across to people who are like me and those who are not like me, so that they'll know what it's like to be me.
I think what's really important about the program is that it exposes people to some skills that they wouldn't have gotten otherwise in an environment where they're free to make mistakes and try things.
The apprenticeship program is an 18-month comprehensive media training program designed in three phases. Phase one orients apprentices in theory, basic radio production skills, service to the station, and culminates in a production simulation. Phase two accelerates these fundamentals by emulating a real-time work environment. Apprentices sharpen their ability to conceptualize, use the existing technology, and frame content while beginning to mentor new recruits. Phase three refines the areas of creative and technical specialization of each apprentice into advanced levels of production. Our senior apprentices are the primary mentors to newer generations and ensure that the highest standards are maintained.
There are so many different ways that the program has had a serious impact on the station, more than just the numbers of people that have come through here. KPFA does, in fact, sound more open. It has more access to it, and a lot of that is because of the energy of the apprenticeship program. The idea of having a training program that is incorporated into the station's daily life, where it's not only a question of giving to the program and the people that are in it, but the people in the program giving back to the station in ways that are very concrete, in ways that people can see. This, I feel, is one of the great strengths of the program.
The First Voice Apprenticeship Program has been KPFA's major vehicle for outreach to underserved Bay Area populations. Each group of apprentices represents one generation, three overlapping generations operating concurrently from beginning to advance, or three deep, represents one cycle. When the process matures and we are nine deep, the program has built a critical mass of skills and experience that supports our own regeneration through the giving and sharing of information in a structured, curriculum-based environment. Culture forms, we have history, tradition, and people before us that we follow. In exchange for this hands-on training, experience, and opportunity, Pacifica gains access to authentic sources of community-driven content, and the community gains access to the media and the flow of information.
There's only one fee. You have to make a commitment to serve your community, to serve those people who aren't here, that should be here, that don't even know they should be here. You have to serve by opening up the doors of media to let your community's voice be heard and teach the information so those doors are kept open for those who are going to follow.
One important aspect of the apprenticeship program, which I treasure, is the passing on of skills and not keeping them, but giving them to other people who can also use the skills in the way that they need to for a voice in their community or whatever they want to do with it, but not holding on to the knowledge.
The mentorship and the skills acquisition is fundamental. We need that. And the key is, once you have those skills, you can't be denied access to the radio because you have the ability to produce your own work.
The First Voice Apprenticeship Program delivers the tools for truth-telling and supports the integrity of Pacifica's original mission to encourage and provide outlets for the creative skills and energies of the community. By implementing this model on a national level, Pacifica embraces the historic responsibility articulated in the First Amendment and the mandate of public broadcasting to help us see America whole in all its diversity. This premise is based on the commitment to keep the doors open and to create access, equity, and ownership for those voices in the community that may otherwise be unheard.
Now, I just am so glad that program exists because I think the concrete efforts to help youth develop their skills are essential. People go around talking about you are the future. Well, how do we help make them be the future unless we offer training, and as that program does?
We need people who look like America, and Pacifica is doing just that, and I'm very proud of Pacifica for doing that, and I think that the entire country should follow Pacifica's lead and begin to train young people to begin to present the news, the real news, and present it in a way that looks like America.
Training and apprenticeship programs are the future of the Pacifica Radio Network. Without these kind of programs, there'll be no producers of tomorrow. So the investment that we make today in new voices, whether they be young people or older people who are new to radio broadcasting, will pay for itself in triplicate, exponentially, in the years to come.
I just wanted to go ahead and comment about a few things related to this program that are, I think, relative to today, where Pacifica is at as a challenge. A lot of people just look at this as a training program, and in fact, it's much more than a training program. It is a program on diversity. It's not something that just is relegated to a classroom or a piece of digital equipment or a microphone. It really is about diversity, and it has its roots in diversity. It was designed to overcome Pacifica's failure in diversity.
It's over 20 years. We're in our 25th generation now. And so that's a historical landmark that's taking place this very month. We're graduating the 25th generation in October of this year, and we're planning to assist. I want to make a note here and a thanks to all the people that have struggled through the crisis of Pacifica, for Dan, for Lonnie, for the other staff members at the national level, because this is the first time in all these 20 years that this program has been embraced by Pacifica. That's a historical moment. For us, diversity is about sharing power, sharing resources and access to knowledge and tools, and it has been suggested recently by other people that we need to cut this amount of time down to 6 months or 6 weeks in order to affect the type of training, or 3 months. But the truth is, diversity cannot be established in 3 months. It can't be established in 3 weeks or short term. It just can't be. If anyone looks at the affirmative action programs that came out of the 60s and the conflict in this country, we see that diversity has got a long way to go. Now, training can be implemented in a short amount of time, but in fact, diversity cannot be. For example, in 1982, Turabu Betsrai, who produced this for us and was one of the first people in Pacifica, along with myself, to establish a Third World Department that was fired from Pacifica in the 70s, we trained over 55 women and people of color in Pacifica in six-week workshops and 3 month workshops. Less than 2% of those people found their way into Pacifica. And what we ran into was departmental resistance behind people who had their positions, who had the privilege to be in Pacifica, and that locked the doors. 2%, that meant that only one person out of 55 got into Pacifica. So we had a serious problem. We had to face that problem of departmental resistance, which in effect is resistance to diversity. That's essentially what it is. It's nothing short of that. So we established this program without permission. We didn't go to management and say, we need to have this. We just did it. And we had no reason to ask for permission, but because of the rights of the First Amendment at the threshold, everybody has a right to voice and their expression. So we just did it and took the high ground. But we didn't get into a sparring match with committees over it. We just did it in order to be an example. We didn't get into conflicts, and our policy has always been not to be confronting, but to serve the communities and provide the training. So we facilitated this. And we knew that no one at the time or no one now has the right into Pacifica to stay in one position, to stay in one job, to stay in one committee, and to stay in one program forever. Because what that does is creates a barnacle at the threshold that needs to be cleaned off. We need to reach into communities that don't even know your meeting, that don't even know. We don't even, if you look at these numbers, you don't see the Native American communities here. Why? Because they can't represent themselves. History has landed on their backs, but they have a right to be here. All these new communities that are coming into this country don't even know. And until we get to those communities, we're not really meeting the mandate. So we have to deal with that problem. What we saw as our solution was an intergenerational solution that could outlast the racism and the bigotry through generations, because not one person could be there. And it can't be a personality, because if one personality is leading this, then you have a personality-driven situation that when that person goes, it's over. So equity has to be realized through cultural transformation. So this is not a training program. It's a cultural transformation. Now, another comment. For 10 years up to the point where the establishment of this program took place, people said that women and people of color could not come in and do 18 months, could not come into the program because they were of another part of the class of the society. They just did not have the privilege. And you remember, in those days in Pacifica, and I've been here for 30 years, they had privilege. They had stipends. They had money from their parents that left them there that would allow them to be in this institution. So the attitude was women couldn't be here, people of color couldn't be here. And we said, no, that's not true. Women and people of color and immigrants have been doing whatever's necessary to get their communities over the mark since day one to build this country. And they've done the work and still went to school, still became doctors, still became lawyers, still became whatever they needed to become to empower themselves. And so after 20 years, we saw at the time of this video being made 250 people. We have 350 people that have gone through this program and spent every bit of those 18 months. And 75 people are working in media today, and a whole lot of them inside of Pacifica. So now let me move on to the final point here, a sequence of points. One of the conflicts that takes place in Pacifica and has been here is that we're fighting over the analog air. That's half the crisis. People are at war over 24/7 because there's only so many hours. And when you magnify the ratio of 24/7 in relationship to the need of diversity and the amount of pain in America, you can't have a win-win situation. You're going to force contention, force crisis, force micromanagement, force tension instead of opening the doors. And that's been part of the problem for 30 years. There's not enough air. There's just not. But because of the decentralizing property of the digital technology, we move it right. We move it out. We have the opportunity that's unprecedented historically to open the doors and bring those communities in their own languages, in their own heartfelt places. In fact, I'm surprised at the level of focus around the digital technology is down here when it should be up here, because there's never been a more opportunity. We got to cross the digital divide. Bring these communities in and begin to stream visually, with audio, with flash, and take advantage of all the young people that are already working on the desktop and reach out with training that can be online to exponentially expand that. Because when we do, we expand audience, we expand support, we expand listenership, and we expand new revenue streams. Got to remember that the only reason radio is declining like this is because radio is a market-driven phenomenon. But if you remember the last time that radio suffered this, was when television was born and the market split. And when that happened, it didn't revive until the diversity issue was there in the name of Elvis Presley doing music that was really black. And it bore the top 10 and it rose up. And then we're seeing the same phenomena regenerate. It's all moving to the web, and it's a bandwidth question. So I just want to close this by thanking you for the opportunity. We hope to be partners in this. Remember, this is a community-driven initiative. It was not sponsored or fostered by anybody. It's because of the tenacity of all those communities and people that have been volunteering for years to make this work that allows us to be here before you today, to be in partnership with a future that can move something into play that has never happened before. Diversity. It's not about training. It's about voices and expression and freedom to be part of this dream. Thank you.
Thank you, Norman.
Thanks, Norman. A few questions, or?
Yes.
Okay, so the report's over, and now we have some time to ask questions with Dan, and if you want, you can ask some questions of Norman as well. Let me just talk a bit about schedule. It's quarter after 12 here. Lunch was supposed to be 5 minutes ago. We do have the board has some box lunches, just trying to figure it out here, how much. We had originally scheduled over an hour for Q&A, and so let's go to, let's tentatively schedule a half hour here and see where we go. So,
Madam Chairman.
Go ahead.
Point of order, I ask that you start from one end of the table, either end, and then come on down to avoid picking and choosing randomly.
And duplication.
Kay, it hasn't been random. It's been by hands, but I'll be glad to entertain that. All right, questions for Dan or Norman?
So are you
starting?
Well, I'm, waiting for hands here. Mark, I'll start here. I'll go this way. Mark.
Okay, I had questions related to the apprenticeship program.
And also some of the priorities that you mentioned, because we've talked about a lot of those before, and I imagine when we look in the budget, we'll be able to see where you've actually put the funds to accomplish them. So I'll limit my comments to the Voices program, and I appreciate your enthusiasm. And I don't think the issue is one of the political nature of it or the need for diversity. My question is more on logistics. If, in fact, we're attempting to create a nationwide model with respect to apprenticeship and training for all the different communities that we serve, I'm concerned about how that will be accomplished. Now, in the last fiscal year, we contributed $30,000 to the development of this program. Principally, I understand those funds were used for the development of the DVD and other promotional materials to sort of explain the program. That I understand. Now, currently in the next fiscal year, we have also budgeted $30,000 for this program in an effort to make it a model for national apprenticeship. And I'm wondering how those funds are going to be utilized. Is there a training mechanism, particularly with an 18-month window, which some people say is too long? We know there are other models at other places that say that's too long to get an end product out. So I think that's a legitimate concern, but mine would be, where is the model that shows that the dollars that Pacifica is investing in this apprenticeship program are reaching the stations? And that, in fact, there is an implementation date in mind for all of the stations to begin to have the seeds of this program planted, if, in fact, we're now talking about a $60,000 investment by the end of next year.
Mark, thanks for those budget, mostly budget and finance-oriented questions. And I'd love it if we could have, you know, maybe tomorrow when we talk about the FY05 budget and budget priorities and network priorities, on those issues and options that I laid out, I purposely didn't put price tags on them. Much of that is unbudgeted, maybe we can deal with that tomorrow.
So what I'm seeing here where it says apprenticeship and training and the dollars, that's not what we're talking about
here. That's not what we're talking about here.
Okay.
Yeah, we're talking about, ideally, and obviously we're working with all the stations, to roll this program out on an 18-month rollout, I think we did a timeline and a budget for it. I forget what we came up to, about 180 or something, something substantial. But we're trying to raise those funds principally through foundations and other types of fundraising.
But
that
what
we're
you're
doing.
Saying is that you are looking at ways. For example, I'm obviously in Washington. We have New York. We have several stations here. We've talked about this a couple of years now. We've invested some money in its development. My question is that there's some point when these stations throughout the network are going to see something that begins to let us know how we can get in on this apprenticeship training in terms of getting our young people involved.
Yeah, in many ways, in fact, going back since we started the inception of the development of this program, all station general managers have been very actively involved in developing and working the program with the First Voice team, Amelia, Norman, others from KPFA. So on that level, that participation has been occurring for the last year and a half or so, but in terms of actual direct on-the-ground participation of rank and file, you know, frontline staff, that has not happened at this point.
Sam.
One of the concerns that I have, Dan Coughlin, is the move that Pacifica is making toward this digital web environment. And I feel that that is a class issue that cuts off a lot of our potential membership, specifically in the underrepresented communities, black communities, Native Americans, and Hispanic communities. And so one of the
poor communities.
And so one of the things that I'd like to see is more of a movement toward updating existing equipment at our stations. And along the same lines, concurrently reaching out and spending monies towards those underrepresented communities, more so than spending thousands of dollars on website additions and whatnot. Can you speak to that?
Yeah, good question. In fact, we have two people here who could really speak to that. One is Don Rojas, who is an internet pioneer, former editor of the Black World Today. Maybe, Don, you can comment on it, and Norman.
Yeah, I would like to comment. In fact, the issue of crossing this divide has been 15 years on the agenda. In fact, the Native American communities are much more advanced in this than other sectors because of the rural reality of technology. It is a poverty issue, but we have to take into account that, in fact, as the digital technology moves into play, more and more of the minority communities or the communities of color are lagging behind in this technology, and it is about workforce development, literacy, and economic dynamics that we have to face this and move forward. In fact, Pacifica should be a major proponent in helping to deal with this. And more of the kids in our communities are getting access to technology, but they're getting access to technology on a second-class level. That is to work as word processors as opposed to dealing with the empowerment of this technology to move forward.
Just a moment, Miguel.
I'll be very brief. I just want to echo what Norman just said, actually. And the question of the digital divide, although it remains fundamentally a class question, it is one that is, in fact, rapidly disappearing. That's the good news. They are, in fact, statistics that show that the growth of Internet usage in African American and Latino communities is, in fact, exceeding the rate of growth in the white communities. So I would assume that in the next 4, 5, 6 years that you would see rough parity. So that the growth trend is upward. In the use of internet technologies in communities of color and in poor communities. So while moving in this direction is not going to be an immediate substitute for analog radio broadcasts, it is indeed a frontier that Pacifica needs to be well positioned in at this early stage, so that we can in fact become a leader in the use of new technologies for broadcasts of both audio and video.
Thank you, Don. I guess let me just make my question specifically to you, Dan Coughlin. What exactly is the Pacifica Foundation doing in terms of spending monies outside of the digital divide, i.e. billboards in poor communities, advertising, possibly the purchasing remote broadcast vehicle vans, et cetera?
That's a good question. Unfortunately, the answer to that is very little, and a lot more needs to be done in those areas in terms of outreach in the communities that we serve.
All right, thanks. Sonali.
My questions are to Norman. I understand what you're talking about in terms of a difference between a training program and what, a program to increase diversity. At the same time, I do feel that 18 months is extraordinarily long. It took me less than a month to acquire most of my skills, technical skills, in doing programming, and I came in as someone who had never done radio before. And I'm wondering if students of this program wait till the end of 18 months in order to produce programming that is actually played on the radio, or are they able to produce it as soon as the skills enable them, within a few months, and then keep, producing better and better. So I'm wondering if the program allows for segments to get on the air right away. And I also understand when you talked about being shut out of departments, there's only so many hours in the on the air programmers. It becomes turf battles. If air space were to be made available, would access increase for graduates or students of the First Voice program? And then I have like one or two short questions as well.
I'll try to answer that very briefly. Yes, people get on the air sooner. They don't get on the first phase. First phase is 6 months. They get in, people's work begins to show up in the second phase immediately. But the 18 months, you can't look at it as just introductory level. By the time these people graduate at the 18th month, they're really much more seasoned than just initial. And there's a cultural movement of support and mentorship that takes place there, too. That's just not, you cannot value it only in a training model. You have to value it on a diversity model where the support structure there is there, building and overcoming the resistance. If we don't cross over into the digital realm, there will be real serious problems because there's not enough airtime to meet the needs. So we have to cross over into the digital. And even though these numbers in the digital realm are lower, they're exponentially, as Don is saying, going to grow through the roof as the bandwidth question diminishes.
I'm also concerned. You said you've been around for 25 years, yet when we, I know that the demographics breakdown that Dan showed, you know, are based on faulty Arbitron ratings, but it seemed as though the demographics of listeners in the Bay Area was perhaps the least diverse of all our signal areas, and I don't know if there's necessarily an explanation. Are there any tangible improvements to, aside from, you know, the number of people that have graduated through your program, tangible ways to assess that this program has increased the diversity of even
absolutely.
Our listeners, aside
absolutely.
From...
I think you not only will see that, and I think Jim Bennett will talk about that when he does his area, is that in the station itself, you'll see apprentices that are serving in every aspect in news that they weren't working in before, in managerial positions. In fact, great numbers of apprentices have graduated into the environment across departmental lines. That reflects in airtime. If you see in terms of reaching out to youth, Hard Knock Radio, which is moving with that whole group, is moving into new territories. Hard Knock Radio is an exact area where it's moving and penetrating into the hip-hop culture, into the youth market, and it's big. And there are many, many programs that reflect that diversity.
And one final tiny question. I know that a lot of programmers that have gotten their training, cut their teeth in radio at Pacifica, have sadly ended up in, like, NPR for various reasons. I mean, there's lots of different reasons. And I'm wondering if graduates of First Voice, I mean, I'm a little concerned about us spending lots of money, lots of energy and effort to train people that end up going to other radio stations and developing them rather than developing them for Pacifica.
Well, I'd say the majority of the people that come out of this program are in Pacifica at this day, but I mean, quite frankly, people in our communities need to get into media and change it wherever they go. We need to transform American media, and that's our goal. We can't be self-serving. We need to change this to bring peace.
No, Ray.
Yes, well, I agree with this last point. I think if we train people, if they don't have a voice in Pacifica, we're still doing useful work. I'm not much of a programmer. I'd like to know, though, this is an excellent program that you have described, and then I say that it's not in effect in other stations. Is there anything at all? Can you tell us what the process is to bring it about to the other stations and what the problems have been or are?
Yeah, I think, we anticipated that after the crisis, people in Pacifica would find out that the issue was more than just a crisis, and they landed on diversity, and they came in November of 1992 and said, we see this issue and we see the diversity is there. At that time, we began to work, and the general managers came to California, Dan came to California, and we put together a very detailed rollout plan that talks about the inventories and working with each station trying to figure out what their needs are, because this is a service. It's not just training, but the apprentices have to be attached to each station to serve their needs, and that's what their curriculums are based on. And much of the same work that was done in this last time that was mentioned of what has been happening is the readaptation of the curriculum for rollout in other stations and rollout on the web and in multimedia so that it can go. But it's been largely a budgetary problem and waiting for the transition of the boards, because there's been so much attention to the transition to the elections that this stuff couldn't be agendized. We're really ready to roll this out. We have a great rollout team, people that are there ready to go into the stations, adapt the curriculum to the stations, and begin to make it work. It's just financial and now the attention of the board.
You're actually saying that we need more than $30,000 then?
Yes.
Saying that you need more than the $30,000.
Yeah. Dave.
Thanks. First of all, I was really impressed by a lot of what you've done, and I was particularly impressed by the phrase, we didn't ask for permission, and I believe in that really deeply. You just start and move forward, and people who need to say something will find a way. The one of the things about the, first of all, in addressing Sam's comment, the cost of access to web audio content is going to just keep falling and falling. CD players, right, along a few years back were expensive. Every kid on the street has one now. You can buy them for $20. That's going to happen. That may happen to internet radio, portable wireless internet radio. So that shouldn't be, I don't think, in the long term, a problem. But one of the problems is audience fragments. Of course, you're going to get possibly larger aggregate listening, but smaller audiences for any given thing. And so if you think about the way you spend money to be able to train somebody, how are they going to, what's your, Mark's going to laugh, what's your business model, of course, for sustaining people doing this with individually smaller audiences? Now, when Mark Shubb came in and wiped out our prior model of community-based programming at KPFK, excuse me, Mark Shubb did not do that. People before him did that, and he came on, but it was part of the strategic five-year plan of an earlier administration. They were wise enough to wipe out our internship program, too, so they didn't create a backlog of people demanding space that was already claimed. And I feel like if you're going to spend money on training, it's got to be integrated with a strategy of how you're going to produce programming, how those people are going to come to air. To spend 18 months and then to get the skills and not be able to is a problem. I just want to say, I think that my concern is that this is the only approach. We should have a strategic discussion about how to balance a long-term training program with other more rapid things and integrate it into how people find get onto the air.
Yeah. I think Tarabu started up the program at KPFK, if I'm not mistaken. But I think the overall strategy is fitting First Voice with the way we're putting it out there is within the multi-platform strategy. That is the re-envisaging, the reconceptualization of Pacifica, not simply as an analog broadcaster, but as a proliferating content. I know we don't like that word so much, but on these different platforms, and we can then see what Pacifica is doing, shortwave, you know, satellite radio, web-based radio, et cetera, et cetera. And that way is how we fulfill our mission now.
Donna?
Can I make one comment to this point?
Please.
This is an excellent point, and I think it has to do with economics and real expansion. This is absolutely on the head of the nail. And as the transition of the technology moves from analog to digital, the more the analog can begin to point towards the digital realm and relevance. So we're going to see a transformation of Pacifica pointing towards the digital realm. So the content of what drives us beyond the digital divide is relevance and application that improves the quality of life. When you unlock that formula and bring in the decentralized model to smaller circles, use the analog to point to it, you'll begin to find new subscription bases and economic bases for distribution of smaller product that can be supported by a greater number of listeners. And they won't be listeners through the analog. They will eventually be going to the digital realm because that's where the technology is moving. Whether we want to go there or not, we're not playing 45 RPM records anymore because the technology moved.
All right, Donna.
First, I want to congratulate you for the program. I think that the goals that you have are absolutely amazing and really needed. I have some very short questions, and I'll just ask all the questions. Hopefully you can answer them. I'd like to know how many hours per week the students are obligated to spend in the program. I'd like to know if they get paid or if there's a stipend to them. I believe you said that 75 out of 350 people are actually employed. I'd like to know if you have some kind of plan to get that percentage up for employment. The cost, and I like to know the cost of the program to Pacifica and to the student.
First of all, the hours in first phase that an apprentice works is really tied to one day shift. They come in and work about 5 hours on that day shift, and they tie to the station's need. It would be different in different stations around that station's need. And it works in KPFA. They manage the community calendar. They manage traffic. They manage recording for the news, editing for the news, because those are the needs at the station. There are other areas like that that work, and that may be different in one station or the other. Then they have to do, on first phase, 2 night shifts a week in terms of very intense workshops that cover everything from the physics of sound
to writing and dramatic construction to journalism to remote recording, all on a first pass level of the information. In second phase, they have to do a day shift as well where they begin to supervise the people in the first phase. They also have to do one class a night. And in the third phase, they're now senior positions. So there's an interlocking relationship that allows for self-sustainability because we cannot become dependent on grants in order to make diversity work. So there's a dynamic that takes place at that level.
Excuse me, Norman. We're trying to limit remarks to 2 minutes, so if you could respond to her questions.
Well, she had multiple questions.
I know she did. I'm just asking you,
I think what you're saying is the first phase, they do about 5 hours a week. Yeah. The second phase, 10 to 15.
Plus night classes. Right.
Okay, and then it increases. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Can I just...
I'm
a graduate apprentice. I just wanted to be accurate information if you...
I've got you on this list.
Just to answer that question, it's approximately 20 hours a week for the full internship.
All right, thank you.
And then I asked if the students were paid, or do they receive a stipend?
No.
No, the apprentices don't receive a stipend, nor do they pay. The agreement we have with people that get into program is that they have to make sure that to get the knowledge, they have to pass the knowledge on to their communities and do outreach in their communities. That's the pay pledge. In order to help sustain the advanced administrative work, the Full Circle Group's graduates raised $40,000 so that they could create a fellowship that helps support the infrastructure work. That's how it worked.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Can I just make a time recommendation here? This is what I'd like to do. I'd like to break at 1 o'clock for 25 minutes for lunch and come back at 1:25 and get back on schedule here. So that leaves us 20 minutes. And I know you want to ask Norman a lot of questions, this is our opportunity to ask Dan a lot of questions. So let's not lose that here. We have 20 more minutes. I have a stack going here of Miguel's next, Kalonji, Carol, William, Gerald, Roger, Alice, Henry, and Ambrose. William, are you still, do you need to want to say anything? Yes, okay. And so let's just try to use this time wisely. I also want to mention that there are a couple things that I would like to hear from Dan that are on the agenda regarding Free Speech Radio News and Pacifica's elections programming, election programming. So in the interest of time, let's just try to move quickly here and ask pointed questions and respond concisely. Thank you. Miguel.
I had two questions. One is relating to programming, and the other one relating to the training that we've just been talking here. The first one, and ten of what Dan showed to us and the increase of the listenership of Democracy Now! As well as the Free Speak Radio. And which really is really good, the increase. But since we are like a family, we're trying to cross the bridge together, nobody fall behind. When I listen some of the station, specifically in WBAI, and sometimes we have really some shows that I cannot even listen to myself. And I just wonder, and I don't want to blame the producer. I know that some of the producers make a little effort in trying to create a show with a little quality. But I wonder in terms of the effort that we're making to help that producer in antenna quality and producing a better show in terms of maybe, I don't know, budget, how he get his guests, who are they. Amy producing a great show. I mean, but are we learning anything from there? I mean, but I'd like to see that you talk a little bit about that and that effort coming from you or the person to, you know. So I wanted to comment on that. And the other thing in terms of the training is... for all the radio station, I don't know what is the procedures they have to do the training. And I know that we are getting new people in our radio station, but I don't know, like, who should we go to have the young person to be part of the training. And WBI, I'm not talking about KPFA. I know you have a friendship there.
Thanks, Miguel.
Yeah, there's no national standards or national focus on training producers in the art of radio, apart from this initiative that the general managers and the national office have started with Norman and Amelia. And that program, too, is in part, I think the intent behind it is certainly one of which we want to try to be able to provide that service to producers to improve skills and the radio, the skills in the radio arts, which range from documentary to news production. So that's part of the motivation behind it. But in terms of the specific issues about local station training, that will vary from station to station.
Kalanji.
I was just curious as to the relationship between this program and DC Free Radio or DC Radio News, and what, to what extent there's a relationship. And because it's, when I was listening to it, it sounded very much what I've heard at home in terms of what they're trying to do there.
Yeah, with the DC Radio Co-op, there's no formal relationship between the development of this program and the DC Radio Co-op.
Carol. Oh, you're passing. I'm sorry. Okay, William?
I just had a more general question, not specifically to apprenticeship. But I will say that just a quick note on apprenticeship, it's not just for youth. If it's probably better to refer to participants as apprentices, and it's probably better to refer to it as because apprentices can be anywhere from as young as, I've seen as young as 21. That was me, as old as, you know, 65. So... and that's an important aspect of the program that people don't look at, is that people older than youth are a part of it. My question, though, is about just our priorities as a board. I feel like this is the second board meeting I've been to, and we have a presentation from the national office, and then we have discussion from the national board, and we get to the end of the meeting, and the national board's on one page and the national office staff are on another page, and it's never reconciled. And my question is, there seems to be a lot of discord around whether or not we should move forward with an audio port. There seems to be a lot of questions about how we move forward with the First Voice Apprenticeship Program. And my question is, where does this get resolved? Is it going to get resolved at the committee level, or are we going to continue to just talk around it until our terms expire? And I'm not sure if that's directed to Dan or Marty or both.
I think one of the things what we're trying to do is that we're seeing this within the context of the FY05 budgeting process. Eventually, the rubber's going to hit the road with money. So what we're trying to do a little bit is to present some of the key issues and critical issues that we think are facing the network and the foundation moving forward, present those to you, and in a timely fashion, i.e. June, and indeed in February or in March, is when we last met, with an eye to resolving these issues through the committee process and hopefully by September. We are not going to be able to do everything that we want to do. Just there isn't the money there. I think we understand that. A lot of things are going to remain unbudgeted. Maybe in year two, though, or year three, we might be able to tackle some things. I know we've all talked about, there's a lot of great ideas out there on the table, and that's good. That's what all the budgeting process is. But eventually, you know, come September, when the board votes on a budget, that's going to be the plan for 05, and that's probably going to come down through a variety of different committee processes, including the Finance Committee, on these issues.
And William, we also have some time tomorrow to discuss the priorities of the foundation. Gerald.
Thank you.
Yeah, I just wanted to...